I still had this feeling that I wasn't done with working for myself. I just wanted to do it in a way that worked for me and that made sense for my personality, my energy levels, and also an impending family.
Welcome to The Optimistic Artist. I'm Monique Story, artist, whiskey enthusiast, and massive cheerleader of artists. I'm hugely passionate about helping artists discover their next step by bringing the clarity, the strategy, and the inspiration you need to turn that art hobby of yours into a thriving art business. Whatever creative dream you've got hidden in your heart, I'm here to tell you it is possible. So get ready, my friend. This is The Optimistic Artist. Jasmine.
Hi.
Thank you for being on the show. It's so good to have you.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Yeah, well, I just think you are such a diverse artist. There's so much going on with your art business, from murals to textile design, collaborating with big brands like Kathmandu, Originals, prints. You just have such a diverse business. So I'm really excited to interview today and to pick your brain.
Thank you. I'm excited to chat.
So because your art business is so diverse and it's so multifaceted, I want to know, how did you get there? How did you start becoming an artist?
Well, take it straight back to uni, I guess. I studied fashion over here, actually, in the Bay Plenty in New Zealand. Worked in the rag trade for 11 years. My first job out of fashion school was at Pumpkin Patch.
I love Pumpkin Patch.
So good, right? So I was there for about 6 weeks in the production room and then got asked to come through to the design room. And I was like, okay. Wow. Got hired as a pattern maker's assistant and then was design assistant within about 6 weeks, which was crazy. So that was, that was really exciting, just filled with color and everything. I had stars in my eyes, like being 19 and fresh out of Polytech. And I was there for almost 5 years and I learned everything there, like the whole Adobe suite, Photoshop, particularly Illustrator. I learned how to do all the surface pattern work, which is such a big part of my business now. And everything like doing photo shoots, production, working with like New Zealand production, but also offshore. So all the factories in China and India and Bangladesh and stuff. Yeah, amazing, amazing company to work for. So after I did that, husband and I got married, traveled, lived in Amsterdam for a year and worked retail over there. I worked for River Island, which is really great to kind of get that interaction with real people and customers and understanding what people liked, how they bought, all that kind of thing was really
powerful. What was your role there?
Just like a sales assistant. Yeah. But half of it was in, like, I would have to speak Dutch. So my parents are Dutch. So my blood is Dutch, but I'm a Kiwi and my Dutch is, we could say, conversational.
Well, we could probably converse quite well because Afrikaans, I can understand a lot of Dutch and a lot of German.
Hoe gaat het?
Oh, baie goed, dankie.
Yeah, okay. We're going to...
This podcast will now be in Dutch from here on in.
Can we get some subtitles, please?
Amazing.
But yeah, it was awesome. Really cool to be in Amsterdam and soak up that culture and just learn about my background and stuff. I couldn't get a Dutch passport. So we came home via 3 or 4 months more travel through like Africa and India and stuff. So yeah, I came home and I worked still in the rag trade and production. So middleman between companies like Max and Easy Buy and Pumpkin Patch and then the factories in China. So that was, again, a lot of fun, a lot of kind of opened my eyes to how much work went on behind the scenes that wasn't design. So that was really helpful. I really want to do my own label. So I asked my boss if I could cut my hours and do my label. And he was like, we need you full time. And so I was like, okay, here's my resignation.
Yes, girl.
Just all in, which was crazy. But yeah, I did my own label for a couple of seasons. It was great. Huge learning curve. Realized pretty quickly that this was my lifelong dream, and realized the reality was not what I wanted, and that I would have to be very extroverted. And there was a lack of authenticity, which I was really searching for.
Yeah.
And it just didn't feel right. So I stopped it, and we moved down here. We moved to the Bay of Plenty.
Yeah. Before we move on, I go back to that moment where you said it was your lifelong dream, mm-hmm. starting your own label. You do it, and it's not what you expect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, talk me through that moment.
Okay. I had always, from when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a fashion designer. I was drawing dresses when I was like 5 or 6 years old. Mum would make them to like what I had drawn.
Wow, that's amazing.
So cool. And I was so particular. She had to do it just as I had done it for me to be happy. And all through high school, everything was just, I was so geared up to work in fashion and do my own label one day. And so I had the opportunity, and I love pattern making. I love sewing. I love designing, all the hands-on stuff.
Yeah.
That is what really got me excited. I learned very quickly that those were the easiest things to outsource, because when you're running your own business, it's so time dependent, and I just couldn't justify pattern making and sewing everything. And my role very quickly became PR, marketing, and sales, and none of those are my strengths at all. I'm just an introvert that wants to kind of hang out and listen to cool music and get in my creative flow. And I very quickly just realized I had to pay lots of money to get in all the magazines, and maybe the story is different for other people, but I just didn't have the connections. It just did not feel right. The gut feeling was just like, whoa, this is not what I expected at all. So when I kind of understood that I was outsourcing all the things I loved, I was like, something's not right. So I think a big thing for me was, is that a failure? And I felt at the time like it was. And then I kind of did a little bit of thinking and journaling around it. And I'm like, well, actually, I think the bigger failure would be to keep flogging away at this business that was not making sense for me and wasn't serving me. I just quickly realized that the best thing for me was just to not carry on. And the world didn't end, and nobody said, oh my goodness, you've failed. Like, how could you stop your business?
Yeah. And I think also the biggest failure would have been to not give it a go.
Exactly.
As well. Yes, because imagine doing what you're doing now, but always at the back of your mind thinking, oh, what if I wish I'd done that? You pursued it. You learned a whole lot of stuff in that process, and you had the courage to say, this is no longer serving me, and that's okay. I think that's amazing. That's beautiful.
That's great insight. And I think going into creating another business, my art business, I learned so much from that. I knew exactly what I didn't want.
You move down to Tauranga.
Yes.
You leave behind a business that's no longer serving you, which I love, but you take with you a whole lot of stuff that you've learned.
Mm-hmm.
What next?
So in Tauranga, I came across a job listing for Nine, and it's a local Kiwi brand here in Mount Maunganui, and I think it really hit me when I had to do my CV, and I realized the amount of hats that I was wearing when I had my own business and all the knowledge that I had learned. I came into that interview and I was so encouraged. I have so much more perspective now talking to another business owner, and I have so much more respect because I know how hard it is to run a business, and I know that I'm so happy for them to wear that business hat. I just want to come under them and just do the things that I want to do, like design and draw and production side, all that hands-on stuff. So I worked for them for a season, and then they wanted to kind of change my role a bit after that season, and it just didn't feel right. So I actually turned down that contract and found out a week later when I was unemployed that I was pregnant.
Oh, great timing.
So yeah, I was just like, what the heck am I going to do? I still had this feeling that I wasn't done with working for myself. I just wanted to do it in a way that worked for me and that made sense for my personality, my energy levels, and also an impending family.
Yes.
So Kenrick and I kind of talked about what I could do, and I just kind of looked back on all the roles that I'd taken on and brainstormed the aspects that I liked the most. So a large part of those were the surface pattern design and textile design was a huge part of what I loved to do. It was the hands-on, the making of the marks. Some of those I would make by painting or drawing or using charcoal or whatever, which makes so much more sense now that I'm an artist. Yeah. That I enjoyed that. So I wanted to bring that facet into it. I also had a really big love for fonts and typography. So I decided to incorporate a bit of graphic design, like branding, to what I had to offer. And I started just freelancing, had my portfolio online and just freelance work slowly came rolling back in, and I contracted back to Nine and did another print with them the next season, which was really cool, and just slowly built up that freelance lifestyle.
So what's your company? What did you call yourself?
Oh, great question. I called myself Pinch and Punch.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, which was actually what I had called my label, my fashion label. So I just rebranded, like, new logo, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, Pinch and Punch.
So people would come to you for logos and prints and just a whole range of stuff.
Yeah, so officially surface pattern design. So any pattern that can be applied to a surface, whether it be like stationery, or a big one for me is cloth nappies.
Cool.
Apparel, anything. But I also kind of fell into painting murals. I was pregnant with Ivy and I saw a call out for artists to do murals down a alleyway in Tauranga. And I was like, oh yeah, that sounds fun / crazy.
I'm just imagining you on a ladder being pregnant.
I know. that was crazy. Luckily it was my first, and you're a lot less large with your first.
Yeah.
So I kind of pitched my idea and was very open with them. I've never painted a mural before, but I'm super keen. This is my background. Would you have me? And they were like, yeah, okay, let's do it. And so I chatted to a couple of the other artists, Alex McLeod and Shane Walker, who were also doing murals down that same alleyway. Those guys are like amazing, so clever. They like kind of took me under their wing and they helped me get my design onto the wall, and just was so encouraging. So I painted my first mural at 20 weeks pregnant.
Oh my goodness.
I was so tired. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love the murals. I love painting murals. So physical, but so much fun. And I think the biggest thing I enjoyed was the interaction with the community. I learned that I had to factor in time to have chats because everyone wants to know what you're doing. So yeah, that was the very first kind of step into actual painting and murals.
So had you done any painting before this stage?
I mean, just as a kid. Nothing really at all, apart from just kind of making small marks for textile designs. But that was about it. I didn't really paint at all before that. The very first time I picked up a paintbrush in my adult life, Kenrick bought me a massive piece of plywood. I'd seen something in my sister-in-law's hair salon that another local artist had done, and she painted on a massive piece of plywood, and I was like, that's so cool. And so Kenrick came home and bought me a massive piece of plywood from Bunnings. I just bought some house paint and set it up in the garage and just some paint around and painted this hideous abstract piece, which I still have at home. I painted on the other side of it, and that's the but that's showing now in our lounge. But I know it's there on the back.
Oh, how special.
Yeah, it's really cool. But just so cool that he encouraged that and he saw that, because I was just like, oh, I want to get back into painting. So yeah, that was the very first time. And then from that, that's why I was like, oh, maybe I could do a mural.
Okay. You're doing mural.
Murals. I know.
On the podcast episode that I released yesterday, I'm pretty sure I say murals.
Murals, yeah.
Like Muriel's wedding. And I still can't say, is it a mural?
Mural. Mural.
A mural. It just sounds too like Australian. Mural. A mural. Stop trying. Yeah. Okay. So you've got your own freelancing business, Nick. So now you have a baby. What is that? What was that transition like for you?
It was a huge shock. That sleep deprivation, overwhelming for sure, as any mother can probably understand. I put my freelance business on hold. We were out in Katikati, which is a very small town about 45 minutes out of Tauranga, and so incredibly isolating on a lifestyle blog.
Yeah.
And I think that was super hard. My mum was an hour away, and postnatal anxiety, which only kind of understood maybe a year down the track, just a huge dynamic shift on your relationship and your identity, all that kind of stuff. And just having a freelance creative business when you're not feeling the creativity because you're exhausted, that's tough. So I just kind of parked it for a while and just threw myself into being a mum and doing everything for everybody else. I laugh, but it was not ideal. That, you know, I realized second time round with Otto, I had to prioritize myself and that I couldn't be the best mum I could be if I was putting everybody else before myself.
Yeah.
So that was tough to kind of pull myself out of that. And yeah, postnatal anxiety sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so common. So, so common.
And a lot of people don't realize it until they're almost through it, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. And it's so hard to spot because you're so exhausted and you're just focused on the next feed or nappy change or clean clothes or washing or whatever. So, yeah.
I think if you're a naturally creative person and for whatever reason life pulls you out of that, you're just not.
You just start sinking.
You do. Yep. You just slowly start sinking, which is why even if you are in a space where you can't necessarily have a creative business, prioritizing being creative is so important.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can still remember the first time I picked up a marker when I had Ivy. Maybe she was about one. And it was lockdown, the very first lockdown from COVID. And Kenrick and I were kind of doing shifts of childcare. And I remember picking up just a A4 random visual diary that I had lying around and picking up a marker that I had and just filling a page for the first time. And I was like, oh man, I have missed this so much.
Yeah.
To not be creative for almost a whole year. I was like, this is such a huge part of who I am. So from that, I think that was a huge tipping point into healing from PNA.
Yeah.
And so I just kept doing that. I had that block of time every day while Kenrick was looking after Ivy. I would just draw and draw and draw. And sometimes it was horrendous and sometimes it was just scribbles. But that was such a massive healing part of my journey.
Yeah. So the second time round with Otto, do you feel like you did things differently?
Oh, totally. Yes. So much more perspective, but also just knowing that it's not going to last forever and you cherish those moments and the growth, and each kind of 3 months you're like, oh, okay, cool, this is easier.
Yeah.
This is getting easier. And for Kenrick, he was much more able to have that perspective as well.
Yeah.
What do you say? I feel like I've lost my wife. And you kind of do. You're a mum and that's all you've got to give. And that's really tough. But also knowing that, hey, I trust that we're going to start inputting back into our relationship and all that kind of stuff as well.
There's this amazing theme that I keep seeing that you do. It's when you are faced with hardship or difficulty, you just have this ability to go, okay, what am I going to do about this? Mm. How am I going to allow this adversity to actually make me better? How am I going to push through? I think that that's really, really key to people who have success. Yeah. You pursued your dream.
Yeah.
It wasn't what you expected. And so instead of giving up, you were like, okay, well, how can I respond? What can I do differently to keep moving forward?
Yes.
And then same with having a baby. How can I keep moving forward? And you've given me three examples of hardship, and every single one of them, you've walked through them with so much more than you had at the beginning.
Yes. Cool. Oh, I love that insight. Thank you. Yeah. It's so encouraging.
Every single thing you've walked through, you've come out the other end better off.
Mm.
You've got more tools. You've got more experience. You've got more insight into who you are, how you want to do things. All of the negative experiences in our life, if we let them, if we approach them with possibility, open up doors and add to our capacity and add to who we are as people. I love that. That's such a great lesson for people to hear and see and encourage them, because we all face those walls, right? We all find ourselves in front of these massive mountains, impossible to climb over, but we just need to put some stuff in our backpack and walk around. You know, sometimes we can't go over the mountain, but we just need to walk around the mountain and still get to a really beautiful place.
Yeah. But also, like, getting the right I'm going to jump on your analogy, getting the right things to put in the back, getting the tools, getting the help. You don't have to do it alone, and being honest with your friends and family. Hey, we're struggling. We need some help. So yeah, that's cool. I feel so encouraged. And
Yay.
It's great. Thank you.
That's another theme, is you have the ability to ask for help.
Yes.
Like when you did the mural, mural. I can't say mural. You contacted those artists.
Yeah.
Instead of being intimidated by them because they had more experience.
Yeah.
You were open, you were vulnerable, you were honest, you approached them, and they helped you.
So I think the biggest thing for me is always ask for help, because what's the worst that is going to happen? They say no? Well, ask somebody else. I've approached galleries and I got a big no, or not yet. Not everybody has the capacity to take you on, and maybe the timing's not right, or maybe your work's not right, or whatever. But just ask, what's going to happen? No. Okay. Somebody else will say yes. So I think just holding that lightly has been really helpful for me.
Yeah. I think sometimes we can look at people who have success and you just assume that they just got there on their own, or they just had everything they needed in their backpack. But it's like, no, they actually went to people and asked for help and asked for opportunities and weren't deterred when it was a no. Mm-hmm. Like you said, if someone says no, you just ask the next person, and eventually it's going to be a yes. Yeah. But it takes like a certain level of humility and vulnerability to ask, right? But those are the people that move forward in leaps and bounds, the people who can ask and not be afraid of the no, or not be afraid of admitting that actually I don't really know what I'm doing, or this is my first time.
But
so at what point did you see yourself as a professional artist? Like, what was the tipping point?
Okay, so I realized that I loved painting murals, but I had also gained this knowledge from my fashion business that I was very aware that I'm an introvert with a young family that take up, like, I want to spend my energy on them, not on other people, because as an introvert, my energy comes from being alone. You're not alone that much when you've got a young family. So yeah, I just really wanted to have something that would create a place that was nourishing for me and would build me up. My workplace, I wanted that, a retreat away from my family that would build energy so that I could go back to them with my cup full. So murals, not requirements. So anyway, I decided that after painting this plywood piece, that maybe I could try my hand at art. And I was like, oh, what's my style? What's me? Who am I as an artist? Am I an artist? And So I just started playing with a bunch of stuff like I knew how to do. I just took my textile design process one step further and painted it. That's essentially what I did. So then I had ordered my first big boards. So I went straight from, I don't know what normal people do, but I ordered a 1.1 meter by 1.1 meter board. I really just like painting on wooden boards. And I painted on those for the first time. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. And I pitched to a gallery straight away. And I was like, hey, I've got this collection of work. Would you be interested in it? And Elliot from Endemic World was like, yeah, let's do it.
Amazing. You just asked.
And he was like, yeah, your work's awesome. It's really cool. Send it up. Anyway, and so, yeah, we delivered them to the gallery and I was like, oh my gosh, like massive stars in my eyes. And Elliot was amazing to work with. He gave me some epic feedback and was just so helpful, and I just asked him all my silly questions and he was just not even bat an eyelid.
So good.
My first piece with him sold that weekend that it was in the gallery. So I think that was a tipping point for me. Huge amounts of affirmation and validation coming from that first sale. I kind of knew that I could do it in my own head, but putting it out there into the world and just being like, yeah, you can sell something.
Okay, so you have sold your work with a gallery. It's giving you validation. You're thinking, yes, I can do this. Mm-hmm. What mind shift changes came about for you when you started to see yourself as a professional artist? And what did that look like for you?
Great question. I had this newfound confidence and I wanted to back myself. And so I invested into an epic website, which I had built for me, which I swore that I would do after building my own website for my fashion brand. I was like, never again. Get the professionals on board with this. And also under Elliot's advice to rebrand from Pinch and Punch. So I was painting under Pinch and Punch to rebrand as my own name, Jasmine Cruz. And simultaneous with that, I dropped doing the graphic design brand work. I was like, I'm doing this, I'm gunning for it. Yeah, just concentrating on the original art, the art prints and the surface pattern.
Yeah. What do you think has been the best thing about building your art business versus working for someone else?
I think for me, knowing that I know how I want it structured so that it will work for me and for our family has been super key.
Yeah, I think it's another pattern that I keep seeing you doing is thinking, how can I structure my life, my business, in a way that actually serves me, uses my past experiences, uses my current skills, and just runs in a way that brings me life. I think that is so key.
Because it's sustainable, right? Yes. Like if it doesn't make sense for who you are and your energy and your personality.
I just did a podcast episode about this. There's so many options and so many possibilities for how we can build our art businesses and really promote ourselves that it can just be overwhelming. Yes. And you can start to compare and look around at other people and what they're doing. But I think the key is to how to structure a business is inside of us. Yes. So for you, you knew that designing your own website is going to destroy you. So you paid someone for that. Whereas for me, I'm like, that brings me life. I'm going to outsource something else. And so it's not about doing what someone else is doing. It's about looking at who am I? What are my past experiences? What are my strengths? What's my life? And what do I want my life to be like? And if we let those things guide us as we set up our art business, that's sustainable. It's joyful. So and then that ends up being successful.
Yeah. Oh, it's so, I think that's so helpful.
Yeah. What about what has been the hardest things about setting up or running your art business?
Self-doubt, getting out of my own head for sure has been really tough. And creative block, I would say, has been really hard, especially like I'm kind of going through it right now, going on a bit of a journey to come back from wrapping up maternity leave and just being tired and all that kind of stuff. There's huge time constraints. I'm still feeding Otto, so I've got a window. Oh, it's a bit better now, like 3 or 4 hours. And then I've got to be back into mum mode. I've got to feed. And it's, I find that switch is so hard and interrupts that flow. So I think I'd love to kind of share a few things that I'm doing currently to kind of get back into my creativity. So one thing that I learned from lockdown and finding myself kind of after postnatal anxiety, getting just a terrible quality A4 visual diary and just any old marker or a pencil or whatever, and just doing a page every day before I start my practice or before I'm in the studio. I mean, it's not every day, but you know, the repetition of doing that frequently and often just helps me to loosen up and turn my brain off. What else am I doing? Just really keeping track of what's going on in your head and questioning it. Your brain is not to be trusted.
You are 100% speaking my language.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. I think the first episode I did for the year was about the stories we tell ourselves.
Yes.
Yeah. Because we live out of those stories. The way that we approach everything is from those stories that we tell ourselves about us, about our art, about people. Mm-hmm. And it can be scary to, face those stories. Mm-hmm. But if you just get curious about them and actually just question them to start off with, you might find they're not actually true. Okay. In my mind, anyway, I think you are the queen of collaboration.
That's been going around in my head a lot. I'm really? Like, I love it. Yeah.
Okay. So your work has been on stationery. It's been on nappies. You've had so many collaborations with different brands. Can you tell us a quick overview? What are some of the places your art has appeared?
Okay. Wrapping paper and greeting cards and nappies, apparel, like lots and lots of apparel. Yeah. I'd like to do shoes. That's on my wish list.
Yeah.
What else? Fabric, of course. Oh, like wall mural. So Mini and Me, which is Australian company, I have a little bit of artwork with them, so you can order like wallpaper, like decals and stuff. Oh, coffee cups. Yeah, I did a little collab with Biopack.
How does it come about? Like, how do you?
I'm just asking.
Just ask. I love it. See, people, it's very simple. All you do is you ask. Okay, well, I really want to delve deep into that because I want to know, how do you know who to ask? Mm-hmm. How do you ask them? What do you need to include? What not to include? Tell us a little bit more about the asking process.
If you've got a lot of stuff on your social media, that can be so helpful. If you've got your Instagram, you've got some cool products and prints and your face and built up a little bit of history of some clients that bring you a bit of credibility, that's all really helpful. You've got to get your first client from somewhere, right? So leveraging people that you already know or companies that you've worked with. So I guess my first official collaboration was with Nine, and I contracted back to them after I had finished being employed by them. That was kind of my first like real portfolio for textile design. That was really helpful. And then Instagram has been really incredible for connecting with brands. I have done everything from building a really nice relationship with brands, genuine, that I like working with, but also coming across a brand, somebody's tagged somebody, you know, you go down the rabbit hole, and then coming across a brand, you're like, oh my goodness, I love them. Just say that. Hey, I've just come across you, somebody, and I love, love, love your brand. If you're ever keen to take on an artist, or if you're looking for a collab, I would super be keen to get involved. Who can I email? Who can I send my portfolio? And just be genuine. It's another human being that you're talking to. So, but yeah, honestly, just ask.
Yeah. And what do you think would be good to have in your portfolio? Because my mind automatically goes to Canva, where you can actually take your work and they do smart mock-ups. So even if you haven't worked with a brand before, you could in your portfolio show what your work would look like on a cup, on a bag, on a t-shirt, on a towel. With Canva, just literally does that with a click of a button.
Canva did that. It's great. Yeah, here I am slaving away on Photoshop.
drag and drop, baby.
Oh, man, okay. You've just changed my life.
In terms of portfolio, what's essential to have in your portfolio if you're looking to have a collaboration with a brand?
Something that they can envisage on that would be complementary to what they already offer. So, for example, I want to get my work on some shoes, mock it up on some shoes or even a bag. And those mock-ups are incredible. They're so helpful. And just you be open with it and be like, this is not an actual product, this is a mock-up. I think people appreciate openness and honesty more than if you're trying to claim something that you haven't done. And then I have a licensing gallery on my website, which is a whole bunch of little squares of patterns that I have available to license. But also, like, somebody could license some original artwork if I have been smart enough to photograph it properly. So yeah, just what else do you want in your portfolio? Obviously about you as an artist and what you enjoy doing, but just put out there what you like, what your favorite pieces that should be in your portfolio, the stuff you want to attract. Yeah, put out what you want to attract. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And what should you be looking for when you're looking for brands to collaborate with?
Again, what you want to attract, what excites you. As soon as I'm like looking through a brand's Instagram, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so epic. This is so exciting. I start to feel that vibration of like excitement. And I think the biggest thing is I start getting ideas straight away. I'm like, oh man, I could do this, or like I could do this and this would be epic. I don't go as far as like actually doing it, or I might do a quick sketch because I don't want to put out my time for something that's potentially not going to happen. But just say like, oh man, like I'm so excited, like my brain's spinning ideas already, I would love to work with you. I think that's how I know if there's a brand that I want to work with them. Yeah.
Can you talk us through what the process actually is? So you might reach out to them or they might reach out to you, then what?
So it's usually an email, like we'd take it into an email, and then they will check out my Instagram website and licensing gallery. And I'm always happy to mock anything up, like you say, like put it onto a pair of shoes or a jacket or whatever. If you want to see what that looks like, I'm happy to go down that road. So that's what is already available in terms of cost price. That's my lower tier. If a brand wants to create something for their product, it comes with a higher price tag, but then I can work with them closely and create something specific for them that will only be licensed to them. So essentially, once they're happy with what they've seen from me and they're like, yes, we want to get involved, then we talk price and contracts, like can I license this to something else. A lot of my work is licensed on for one company on nappies, but it's also licensed for a different company on cushions and for a different company on greeting cards, and they're all different categories, which is awesome. If a print does, it's usually one print, one or two prints that do really well, and everybody wants that design.
So that's really important to include, as brands understanding that that print is not exclusive to their brand and that product, but you can assure them that you're not going to give that pattern to a competing client who's also doing bags.
Exactly. Yes. So, and that's why it comes with a lesser price tag, is because it's not exclusive. Yeah. If they want exclusive, if they have the budget for exclusive, then that's when we do something. Either they buy out a print that I've already got, so, and then they just, that comes with a higher price tag and they buy that whole print and I can't license it to anybody. Or the next step is commissioning something and working with me one-on-one and creating something epic. Yeah. And that also comes with exclusive license.
So in terms of the pricing, do they just buy it outright and it doesn't matter how many products they make? How does the pricing work?
Usually per unit. So we'll come to an agreement. I usually start with up to 300. If they want to go over 300 units, then they need to buy another license.
Tell us about the contracts.
So I have a couple of different contracts. I have a contract for my surface patterns for non-exclusive licensing, exclusive licensing, and commission-based licensing. And that just outlines all the different in terms of audience. So if it's global or like just Australia or just New Zealand, as well as the amount of units and usage rights. So what products it's allowed to be seen on, all that kind of stuff.
So if someone's starting out and they don't have a lawyer,
Google is your friend.
You just ask Google. There's a theme here. Just ask.
And that should cover your bottom. And then when you have the ability to take it to a lawyer, do that.
Yeah. So is that the process? First point of contact, mm-hmm. talking about the pattern, talking about their different price points, contract, and then a
deposit. Get your deposit.
Okay, tell us more about that.
Yeah, so I always ask for 50% deposit and 50% on delivery. So that's the same with all my artwork, like commissioned original artwork or all my surface pattern stuff. So yeah, just deposit. I mean, I'm always flexible. If it's a small company, I'm like, hey, do you want me to like split it into smaller payments, do it over a longer term, super flexible. Let's make it work. You just got to lock it in, and you got to protect yourself. And it's at the end of the day, you're a business.
And I think that's key. Like you have to see yourself as a business owner, and sometimes artists don't do that. They just see themselves as hobbyists or just as artists. But being an artist is owning a business, and you have to show up as a business owner. And part of that is A, having standards and having appropriate price points and asking for a deposit.
Totally.
Okay, so you recently had an amazing collab with Kathmandu. Tell us about that. What an amazing opportunity.
Okay, I wasn't sure it was a legit pitch, actually, to be perfectly honest with you. I was like, what? You're Kathmandu, you're a giant, and he's little old me. So yeah, screw you, self-doubt. And so anyway, they had found me on Instagram, and they flicked me an email and said, we love your work. We'd love to work with you to do a print for, gosh, this summer. So it's in store now. This was 18 months ago when they first approached me. So they're working 18 months ahead. So I said, heck yes, of course. I'm beyond keen to to work with you. So we jumped on a Skype call the next week. And I said, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this quick because I'm pregnant and I need to get on this. So they told me in my portfolio which prints from previous clients that they were particularly drawn to. They gave me direction for that particular season, and they said, here's our inspo for colors and themes and stuff. Feel free to reference it, or just feel free to do what you want. So yeah, that was really cool. And so I created two concepts, pitched both of the concepts with them, did it via Zoom because they're down in Christchurch. And yeah, they loved one of them, so we went with that and did the tweaks that they wanted and sent them in the files. And 18 months later, it's sitting in store. And just amazing client to work with, like so lovely, so supportive. And a lot of brands that do apparel don't necessarily promote the artist. You're paid for the work and that appears on the product. Kathmandu were like, we really want to promote you as an artist. So I think the biggest pinch me moment for me was when they sent me some of the product and I opened it up and here's a little swing tag with Kathmandu x Jasmine Cruz. I'm like, what? That is insane. And they still have a little blurb about me in store. And I asked Kathmandu if they would be keen to do like a photo shoot, and they wanted to focus a little more on the video. So I got Rach Hadfield to do photos and Dave Recording to do some video, some epic video. I'd never done a shoot with video before, and it's really different to stills. He had to work really hard, but he was super amazing. That helped with the storytelling and editing and all that kind of stuff. It was awesome. And so I had all this amazing content. And yeah, we created this really cool like little Q&A with how the collab went and how it came about, what my inspiration was and stuff. So yeah, Kathmandu were like super keen for like all the ideas. I've never worked with a brand that has just been so supportive. So yeah, it's really cool. Really amazing, amazing experience.
And I think something to notice, like to note there, is that you maximized the experience.
Mm. Yes.
Especially when you have a collaboration with a big brand like that, you could have just let that slide. But again, you asked.
Yes.
You asked to do a photo shoot and you've just created a whole lot of content for yourself and for the brand. And you just got the most out of that experience, which is great. Sometimes we just move on to the next thing instead of actually using our energy, really maximizing the thing that is already in front of us, that we already have. Okay, one of my favorite things about your business is that it is so multifaceted. You've got the originals, you've got the textile design, the collabs, the originals. Tell us about your thinking behind structuring your business like that.
I really want my business to work for me and for my family, right? So there's quite a lot of thinking that has gone into how to make it work financially for me. I really like having multiple income streams. So the way I get money from originals is different to my surface pattern work and textile design work to murals. I like having the big chunks of money that come with making a big sale of originals, but I also like working with other companies that I get royalties from. So I get recurring chunks of money every month or every quarter from other businesses that are selling my work for their own products. I also am just kind of starting into the whole Instagram partnerships, which is a whole new kind of kettle of fish for me. I want to do it in a way that is still really genuine and I don't want it to come off as salesy, but I also want to leverage the fact that, okay, I'm building an audience here, and if it's relevant, if I think my audience and if I think it's relevant to my practice, then yeah, I'm totally keen to work with other brands. I've worked a little bit with Gordon Harris and Mitre 10. That makes sense. I actually use their products already. Yes, heck yes. I want to tell people about it. So yeah, just leveraging that is really cool too. But I think the biggest thing, just having a whole bunch of ways to make money that is not just putting so much pressure on painting originals or just painting murals. For me personally, it's too much pressure on my creativity, and I want, one of my goals this year is to have 15% of my business being passive income. Like, I'm super passionate about that, and last year it was 10% and I like got a little bit over that, which is awesome. So I just want to keep building on that. And I want to be smart. I want to spend more time with my family. And I just, it doesn't have to be all passive income, but it just alleviates the pressure on me as a creative.
Absolutely. Okay. So before we move on to quickfire
questions,
why don't you tell us what's next for you and where people can get in touch with you?
2023. I have had so much joy from these collabs that I've been doing. And so I would love to build that more and collab with a couple of other brands. And they work quite far in advance. So building that up for the next year. Surface pattern design has always been kind of my first love. So continuing with that textile design side and licensing my artwork is, yeah, I'm super keen for that. And I would also love to get some more gallery representation. So maybe another couple of galleries in Auckland. And I would also like to dip my toe into Australia.
Yes, well, come on over. Yeah, I'd love to have you. I see you doing a bit of a Gorman collab.
Oh my gosh, get out of town. That would be my dream. Yeah. Oh, I need to like take my own advice and just ask. Honestly, it's been on my mind since I like locked in Kathmandu. I'm like, let's go Gorman.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for you, absolutely.
All right, guys, watch out. Yeah. I'm going to take the world.
Yeah. Hello there. You might not realize this, but you're actually listening to Past Monique.
and past Jasmine. Since recording this episode, we've become really good friends.
Yeah, like sending excited videos about my shoe storage kind of friends. But more importantly, we've realized that we both have a heart for showing artists what's possible and equipping them with the skills to take their next step.
If you think your work would look awesome on some apparel, coffee cups, or wrapping paper, maybe on a Gorman dress, then we got something for you.
We present to you our own little collab. Enter Stage Right, our new workshop, The Art of Licensing and Brand Collabs. In this workshop, we will cover the basics of art licensing, how to gear your Instagram to position yourself as someone brands can't wait to work with,
how to prepare your portfolio with our drag and drop templates, the legal aspects of art licensing, like contracts, and how to write an irresistible pitch.
If you've ever imagined your art on a bag or daydreamed about a collab, then this workshop is going to be your jam. In fact, by the end of it, your work could be on the front of the jam jar.
We're still putting the final touches on the workshop, but we just couldn't wait to share it with you. If you jump on the waitlist right now, you'll get access to our early bird pricing. You can go to the episode notes or head straight to moniquestory.com/MJ to jump on the waitlist.
That's moniquestory.com/MJ. Okay, enjoy the rest of the episode with Past Us.
Okay, you ready for quickfire?
Okay, yeah.
What are you obsessed with at the moment?
Naming my brushes. Louisa is my tall, sophisticated brush. She was like the tallest girl at high school. Yeah. There's also Jezebel. Jezebel is my gesso brush.
Yes, yeah. Love it. Favorite studio snack?
I was going to say halloumi, but it's way too like messy. Chips. Oh, I love chips.
Flavor.
Potato chips. Okay. Salt vinegar.
How are chips not more messy than halloumi? A lot of potential for crumbs.
I reckon like maybe the oil could like help spread the oil.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I feel you. What do you listen to while you paint?
Quite often silence. A lot of the time podcasts. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I have a couple of Spotify playlists that I just have on repeat.
What's one thing that wasn't supposed to, but has made its way into a studio and is now forever a studio item?
The kitchen spatula. And it was my husband's favorite, and he's still a bit dark at me.
Yeah.
It's such a good tool.
It is.
Yeah.
I have many a kitchen utensils that are now in the studio. Yeah.
Also the hairdryer. I actually dry my hair in the studio now.
I haven't got that far yet. Well, thank you for being on the show. And thank you for sharing so openly and honestly and vulnerably. I think there's a lot of really great stuff in there for people.
I'm sad it's over.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to come and hang out in your studio and meet those brushes. I just want to highlight a couple of things before we go. So these are the things that really stand out for me. First, I love the way that you approach the obstacle in front of you. I feel like you're really real about how hard it is, but you are not defeated and you will walk through it. Mm. And I love the way that you use what you have. You're not looking at what you don't have. You're looking at what do I have? How am I made? What are my strengths? Mm. And then you're using those things to create a life that gives you joy, that fits around your family. I love the way that you've done that. And you just have the guts to ask.
Yeah.
Just ask. I love that. I'm a very visual person. So when I'm talking to people, I just see images. And so when I talk to you, I see you just sitting on a beautiful, colorful carpet, folding little origami paper planes and just throwing them out. And some of them are hitting walls and they're falling flat. Some of them are getting doused by the rain and they never make anywhere. But some of them are just landing exactly where they need to land. And some of those get sent back to you in the forms of opportunities and advancements. And some of those get sent and they don't even come back to you, but they actually land true for someone else in their heart. And they are encouraging and speaking life into other people's hearts and to other people's lives. So that's just the image that I see when I talk to you and when I think about you. So I just want to encourage you. You're doing such an amazing job, and it's so cool to highlight you and to show artists what's possible when A, you don't give up, and B, you show up as you are. You don't try to be someone else. You look inside, who am I? What have I got? And this is what I'm going to do to take on the world and change the world.
The best way forward is one step at a time. If learning to license your work and collaborate with brands is your next step, don't forget to sign up to our workshop by going to moniquestory.com/MJ. If the thought of reaching out to a brand seems really daunting, or you have more questions than answers when it comes to things like contracts, we totally get it. This workshop is your step-by-step guide that covers everything you need to know about licensing your art and getting that brand collab. Sign up to the waitlist at moniquestory.com/MJ. All right, guys, go and find your possible.